it's basically us as a society that stopped children from doing what they're supposed
control.
To be doing. Right. So I always say there's adult-led feeding and there's baby-led feeding.
Hi, I'm Irene Yanku, and this is my podcast. I have spent my entire career in dentistry learning about new technology, techniques to better my clinical skills, and now I'm a practice owner and leader. In life, as a learner, I've noticed my truest love for learning has not been about teeth or what material is best to use for a core buildup. It's been learning about people in our dental community. The educators, scientists, clinicians, business owners, and advocates. Their stories, their lives, their why, and their what's next. Getting to know them as humans, identifying how they work, what their rituals are, while highlighting them as the true trailblazers in dentistry. And that's what I do here on the show. So hold on to your suction. It's about to get slippery here on the Tooth or Dare podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Tooth or Dare podcast, recording live at SmileCon in this very beautiful booth. I'm very excited to share the story of how I met my guest. I feel like it's the movie, like How I Met Your Mother. Movie, TV show.
I like
completely that. Random. I'm going to share the story with you of how I met Dawn and how stars align. So I'd like to formally introduce you to Dawn Winkleman, who is a speech pathologist and also a swallowing therapist for little tiny humans.
Yes.
Which if you've been listening to the podcast for a long time, you know that I'm obsessed with little tiny humans. I don't have any of my own, but I see a lot of them in my practice. And as a former pediatric dental hygienist, I fell in love with the solutions of myofunctional therapy, which is what led me to also becoming a myofunctional therapist. So let's paint the picture of how we met.
Okay.
So I'm strolling through the aisles of this lovely trade show, you know, just like looking for the stuff and the things and the freebies. And I stumble upon this super cute little booth that has all of these teeny tiny little items that you can see on the screen somewhere over here. And these items are for feeding. They're little cups and plates and I stopped to talk to you because I immediately was drawn by this like connection.
We pulled you in.
You didn't. I came. I gravitated towards you. And then about 15 minutes later, I'm leaving your booth and I'm coming back to this area and I get a text message from the producer saying, hey, do you want to do another slot? Unfortunately, one of the speakers had to cancel last minute. We want to give it to you. So I was like, oh my God, frantically panicking. I'm like, who am I going to invite? I'm like, the people that I just met to talk about the things that I spent 15 minutes talking about. Enter Dawn. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to my world. Very, very,
thank you. Thank
very you. Impromptu.
Very impromptu.
So, you know, nothing about me. You know, nothing about what I do, my practice, my podcast, my anything.
Zero.
It's probably just like the people that are in the audience here. They're like, who is this girl? Why have we seen her three times today? So I want to learn more about you and then perhaps we can figure out how you're, you know, let's go back to birth. Like,
yes.
Can you take me back to like, what was that like? Where did you grow up? Where were you born?
Yes. So I'm Dawn Winkleman. I am a pediatric feeding specialist and a speech pathologist and swallowing expert. And I became obsessed with feeding and eating and swallowing because I am Mexican by nationality.
Okay.
And we are supposed to feed people. So as a very young age, I was drawn to feeding people like my mom would feed the whole family. And then I was quite the talker and quite the social butterfly and constantly getting report cards saying Dawn would do so much better in school if she just didn't talk to everyone. Not knowing that there was a profession called speech pathology where we are the referral source for pediatricians if a child is having any difficulties with swallowing or feeding or eating or speech. Okay. And so these are...
Go back, though. She's jumped from elementary school to high school to being a professional.
Yes,
let's go back to the you.
Yes.
So were you born in Mexico?
No, I was actually born in Yuma, Arizona.
That's like borderline. That yeah, is I know border. Someone yes, on Instagram. He goes by Dr. Ness.
Oh,
and
really?
He's in Yuma.
Oh my yeah. gosh. Usually no one ever knows that city.
Yeah.
So yes, and I was from a military family. So we moved about every year to every 2 years. And the beauty about that is I was thrown into different states, different have different countries. I grew up in Japan.
Oh, wow.
So cool. I had to learn how to eat different types of foods, and constantly moving helped me, again, try to learn how to communicate with other people, eat different types of foods, be encouraged by the culture to yeah. try different things. And to the point where we could literally go to a restaurant and you could order me anything
and
I would eat it. So
it's like a girl in my
yes,
heart.
Yes.
I will say no to anything.
Me too.
But maybe twice. It depends. Okay. So tell me about the pathway to becoming a speech pathologist yes. and then expanding into being a swallowing
yes.
therapist or expert. What did you do in school? Where did you go to school?
So I went to Northern Arizona University, and that speech pathology program specializes in clinical. So just being more hands-on, a little bit less research, more hands-on. And I just loved that. I loved touching the kids, being in everyone's mouth, being able to kind of really, from a tangible standpoint,
yeah.
have that clinical experience. So I went there for my bachelor's and my master's degree. And then we have to do a year clinical fellowship. And so that is a whole year. Now it's paid, but back in the day, it was not paid.
Yeah.
And so I was on the Indian reservations in Hogans, teaching kids how to be able to talk and eat. I was on the cleft palate teams. I was on the feeding teams. I was in the NICU.
And that was all during your placement.
Like, all during
is it considered
placement.
A residency or?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Got it. So pre-master's,
yes.
you did an undergraduate degree in what?
Speech pathology.
Speech pathology. So
yes.
so straight out of school, you become a street pathologist.
I'm
wearing a liner, so I'm like lisping a little bit. So a speech pathologist. Do you have to do a master's? Do you have to do that residency?
Yes.
So it's like,
yes.
even though you graduate with an undergraduate degree,
yes.
it's like,
it's
great.
7 years.
7 years.
Your life.
Wow. And so you were not afforded the opportunity to do anything after your undergrad degree. That's
yeah.
interesting.
No,
okay.
It literally graduated in May and yeah. started our master's.
And like, started right just, away. And this was what year?
Do I have to say that?
No, I mean... No,
I've been practicing for almost 30 years.
Okay.
So
oh,
don't yeah,
look,
it's
whatever that
okay.
secret is.
Yeah.
Tell me later. Okay. So then you graduated. And what is the first step to starting to practice in this field?
Yeah. So it's very interesting. In college, we get very limited amount, even though we are the professions that are going to work on swallowing and feeding. We get very little coursework on feeding and swallowing, which is crazy. Now it's a little bit more different. We get a little bit more education in that, but it's mostly having to go and get continuing education. In my first year out, I spent $20,000 on continuing ed.
That's not a lot.
No, but
that's like one course
back in the 90s. It
at
was.
Spear or COIS.
yeah. So yeah. it was it. And then it's just yeah. continuously having to do that because we are a profession where if we give a child something to eat or drink and they aspirate and pass away, we're liable.
Yeah.
So we really need to be able to understand about allergens and making sure that a child can swallow effectively and making sure that they have the oral skills to be able to eat and drink.
Yeah. And then private practice wise. So
yes.
I guess there are a variety, like in dentistry, you're not a dental person. So
no.
this is all new kind of to you. This is your first dental trade show.
First dental trade show.
Welcome to the sisterhood.
Thank you.
So not a dental person at a school for us, you can either work in a private practice or there's some community settings. Mm-hmm. There are dental hygienists that work in hospitals. Like in Toronto, there's Sick Kids Hospital that has a cleft lip and palate clinic.
Yes.
And that is renowned for its service to fixing, closing, and helping parents adapt to children with cleft lip and palate, or both.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you go? Like, where did you go to? What was your first job? Do you remember your first day and your first job?
I do, which is a funny story. First day on the job, I'm like, I'm a speech pathologist. I'm going to be able to do this. And worked with a gentleman that had a tracheostomy. And he covered his mouth and mucus. Food went everywhere, and I'm a big smiler.
Oh no.
So that was literally first hour, first day, and it was a great reminder of really understanding anatomy and really knowing, you know, it was a reactional lesson of to really saying, like, what happens medically to our patients? How can we respond? And how can we respond with love and trust? And, you know, obviously he didn't do that on purpose, like, and being able to learn and really connect with your patients on a level that is ever changing, right? Our patients' mouths are changing. The people that we work with, the family dynamic is always changing. And how can we make sure that if they've just gone through trauma, how can we make sure that we are not adding in trauma into that? So that was a fun first lesson.
So was that in a private practice or a hospital setting?
That was in a hospital setting.
And then, so that's like a full-time salaried position.
Salaried position.
And then what?
And then I actually was on the feeding team. And so I was on the feeding team at the hospital. And then I also did side work on the weekends and did per diem work in private practices that worked with children. And so I just kept building and rebuilding my skills in relating to feeding and swallowing and the anatomy of, you know, a baby, a toddler, a preschooler, older child, and being able to kind of feel really cool of whatever age group that came into my doors. I was feeling really comfortable and confident. So doing that early on.
I did an interview with someone named Tina Mavronakis, who is a mobile care dental hygienist. And she goes into, I'll link that information below if you want to listen to it. She goes into like elder care facilities. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that she noticed, is that there were feeding concerns in the elderly.
Yes.
And there was this gap of understanding in what, you know, the nurses and the PSWs do when they go in. I feel like we could do a whole episode on the elderly, but I want us to focus on kids today.
Yeah.
And focus on kind of the unique products that you've come to develop because of this journey that's led you through.
Yes.
But before we do that, I want to ask you some questions that perhaps might, you know, ring a bell with some dental hygienists in practice, because the reality is we don't graduate from dental hygiene school. And I'm certain that dentists don't graduate from dental school with the understanding of like what some of these, and we quote them, I air quote them as parafunctional habits, because it may not actually be a parafunctional habit. It may be the result of having some form of either muscular or developmental issue. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even say it. So let's talk about babies. Why don't we start like pre-feeding?
Pre-feeding.
So I feel like that's something that you are the first to do.
Yes.
You've decided that like, hey, it's great that I can teach kids how to eat properly once they're eating solids. But you came to the understanding that if we start training
earlier,
then perhaps we can avoid some of those like deeper seated and rooted issues. Tell me about why we need to start treating little ones pre-feeding with solids.
So basically, if you go down the aisles of a supermarket or a Target or a Walmart, you think that these products were designed specifically by experts in the field that are giving parents these choices of products to be able to use. And actually, that's the opposite. A lot of the products that are actually out there actually can do damage, delays, or cause disorders.
Yeah.
And so I kept thinking, what could we do how could we train the families before they even start solids to actually start working on these pre-feeding skills, these movements of the mouth that are essential to be able to decrease choking risk, improve swallowing abilities, and actually help with pre-verbal skills too, because feeding milestones precede speech milestones. So we want parents to kind of understand that, get that understanding of what can they do in their home to actually really start setting the foundation for proper swallowing, for proper speech, for being able to do all of these movements of the mouth that we know, and also be able to be ready for that first dental visit.
Which we can have a whole argument over that should be.
Yeah.
So speaking of these like food items, the crossover between going from milk to going into solids, which sometimes is mush, right?
Yes.
So At what age, and this is a big question, right? Yeah. At what age should kids be moved into solids away from either formula or breast milk? What's a good number?
So the safe number is 6 months of age.
Okay.
So
the minimum, right?
That is the minimum.
Okay.
The American Academy of Pediatrics, the World Health Organization, they recommend 6 months of age and baby having all the signs of readiness on top of that.
Which is what?
Which is being able to sit independently, being able to reach for objects, being able to have objects that in their grip and be able to bring that to their mouth. To have the tongue thrust reflex be decreased. Doesn't necessarily have to be gone, but it needs to be decreased, which is all about tongue movement, which we'll get into. And being able to also cross midline. So being able to cross from one side to the other in order to be able to feed themselves. We also want babies to be able to be looking at their caregiver, interested in the foods that they're eating in order to know that they're actually interested in that. Mm-hmm. But the caveat here, too, is that it's 6 months of age plus all the signs of readiness. But if baby was born 2 weeks early, it's 6 months and 2 weeks.
Oh.
If baby was born 4 weeks early, it's 6 months and 4 weeks. We want baby to be developmentally ready to be able to start solids safely.
Interesting.
Yeah. But we're still here 4 months of age. That's unfortunately, that's such old recommendations, but it's 6 months.
And so then what's the end number?
Yes.
Because that is, I don't have children. I don't know what that emotional connection would even be. Like, I don't even want to describe it because I feel like I would definitely offend someone. So how long should one withhold from switching to solids permanently? So there's a middle, yes, right?
There,
like, there's a milk to solids, and then there's a solely solids.
So what the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends and the World Health Organization is that baby is supposed to, their primary sense of nutrition is breast milk or formula from birth to 12 months of age, till that first birthday. Even if they're using solids, it's complementary, right?
Right.
So I'll have babies that'll eat.
Antibodies.
Right.
All of the, like,
them to eat.
Yeah.
Yes. But we want them to have that nourishment and all of that nutrition that has a lot of fat content in there because baby's brain's developing, right?
Mm.
And we want baby to also learn all these oral skills. This is why it's so nice to be here talking about this with all of our dental professionals, because of the fact that we are moving from tongue movements from a bottle or a breast is very different than chewing and eating solids, which is very different than suckling some purees. So all of these mouth movements have a developmental timeline, and we can add nourishment into that to be able to facilitate that mouth movement, be able to facilitate nourishment, and be able to actually get children into the right mouth structure at their first birthday.
So talk to me about bottle feeding.
Okay.
So we go from perhaps breast milk from the source to maybe never being able to breastfeed.
Yes.
And there are, if you walk down a baby aisle, every brand has a bottle, some have bags, some don't have bags, some have, I don't know, there's just a variety of different things. You're a first-time mom, you're subscribing to a variety of different Facebook groups and platforms. How do you know what's the right bottle that's going to deliver long-term developmental effects versus destroying developmental effects?
Yes.
And also, you're on a budget. So now, So now you're on maternity leave and you're not, it's not cover. You don't like, you know, like, do you buy the more expensive one because you presume it's going to be better? Is more expensive better when it comes to bottles?
Not necessarily. No. And the big thing here is you want to be able to use a bottle that works for your baby. So sometimes that may be an expensive bottle. Sometimes that may be the absolute cheapest bottle on the market.
How do you know that which one works?
That is when you get with it. It's all about development. IBCLCs are the go-to professional to be able to help facilitate that breast and bottle starting out feeding. They can help a parent be able to feel comfortable with what they're doing. You can also want to pick a bottle that's going to coincide if you're breastfeeding and bottle feeding. So you want
to simulate a similar pattern.
It could be a similar suck pattern, not necessarily the similar feel, right? So there's bottles out there that look like a breast, right? But that might not be the same feel of the breast, right?
So, and you can't really ask the baby. It's like, hey, baby, does this feel the same?
And how's that feeling for you?
Imagine.
But babies do communicate that, right? So we look
right,
at those
push
signs.
Their head away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we look for those signs, and we want to also develop trust during this whole process, because when you're breastfeeding, the trust is already there.
Yeah.
When you're bottle feeding, you have to be very cautious about how you're feeding, how baby's responding, looking at baby's cues. If any of us get the chance to be able to help feed a baby, we want to be able to really help make sure that the head is in the right position, because sometimes it's not about the bottle. It's about
like
how baby's positioned. And so, and that continues throughout the timeline for a child. Positioning is everything to keep that airway protected.
Right.
So sometimes it's just having the right position, and then a bottle may completely change.
So it's not who it's made by or
no.
what the brand is. I mean,
no.
perhaps you're looking at different materials and stuff, but
yes.
generally speaking, baby gets to decide what bottle baby wants.
Yes.
And sometimes it's the cheap one and sometimes
yes.
it's the expensive one.
Yes.
So you go through a lot of bottles, I guess, to figure it out. And it's not always a one size fits all.
Yeah.
So for moms out there that have a hard time, I guess you just kind of got to go with the
yeah.
flow.
Literally.
Go with the breast milk flow. That was bad.
And it's also seeing how baby yeah. is responding, right? If baby is really being engaged and wanting to hold that bottle, then you might want to offer a different sheet. But
yeah.
it's listening to baby's cues, following baby's cues, looking at how
baby's
their mouth
boss.
Is moving. Baby is boss. And if we have that thought process, then when the child starts solids, when your child becomes a picky eater, which is a natural developmental thing, you can know and trust in the child that they are going to lead the way, that
yeah.
if you are there to help provide and make that a trust connection, then mealtime will be a joy. It will not be a battle. So it's just helping to watch baby's cue and respond accordingly.
Let's talk about this. I love these like transitionary phases that we're going through.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the feeding change
mm-hmm.
from bottle to feeding delivery types.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so I alluded to this earlier that obviously I said I'm not a parent, so I don't know that there are a variety of different feeding types. And
yes,
most recently I went to a friend's house and baby is sitting in little baby food area
mm-hmm.
and they have a dog and they have a small human being who is just provided with like a plethora of items
yes.
in this like, well, baby will figure out when they're full. Like it's no big deal. Like we're sitting and having our coffee and like her daughter is on this little tray table and there's just food
everywhere,
food in her hair, food in her face. And we've all seen those photos on Facebook and it's super adorable when it's not your child or when you're like not a guest sitting there. So then baby's like throwing food at me and mom's laughing and she's like, ah, and I'm like, not funny.
Yeah.
And there's food all over the floor. And then there's a dog who is now overweight.
Oh, yeah.
Because more food makes it onto the floor than makes it onto the into the mouth. And it's just everywhere. And then the statement that she gave me at the end, she's like, oh, it's fine. We'll just give her a bath later. So like this kid gets 3 baths a day
yep.
at this point, and she's getting a full bath with like a wipe at the table. Is that normal?
100%.
Really?
100%.
So I don't know any
yeah.
of this information. I'm like, I don't know. Is that normal? Is it not normal?
Yeah.
I'm like, it's cute. And there's
yeah.
a dog's getting a snack.
Your
too.
Friend is rocking it. Because again, we're following baby's lead. What happened is when we start solids, we are learning all about sensory experiences.
Yeah.
So feeding is a sensory activity. In fact, it's the most sensory activity a child ever gets a chance to do. We get to smell the food. We get to taste the food. We get to touch the food. We get to hear the food. We get to grab the food, right? We are learning all about food.
Yeah.
If all of those are taken away,
right,
i.e. given a pouch, you know, see the food,
we
smell
talk, okay.
food, which we'll talk about
I
that.
Need to
I
know about this pouch because I've
yep.
seen that pouch too.
Yep. If we do purees, it's out of a jar. Baby has no control. There's no touching of that.
Yeah.
So,
and now we see these little like squishy bottles.
Yes.
Like it's like a tin
yes.
foil looking thing and it has a little nub on it.
Yes.
And it's just like,
yes.
We used to drink juice out of those when we were
yes.
kids. Do you
yes.
guys remember those? You would like poke a straw
yep.
through it and
Capri
it was
Sun.
Like Capri Sun. Yeah, that was
yep.
it.
So
are those
all
good
things,
or
no?
Or are they just like
an
en route
yes.
thing?
So what I tell families all the time is we are on the go as a society. Like we need to make mealtime work for us no matter where we are, how we're going to do it. So in general, all of those actually bypass safety and development. So we want to make them safe. So I tell families, you can do that. If you want to use a pouch, you can absolutely use a pouch. If you want to be able to have any packaged food, we can make it more developmentally appropriate. But
the pouch is that, like, it kind of looks like a ring pop sort of thing. So it's got like a little circle or a pacifier hole. It looks like a pacifier, I guess. Yeah, and then it's got like a mesh thing. And then you just like,
So that is actually a mesh feeder. So that's
what I'm talking about. That's what I've seen. So it's this like mesh looking thing and you like just jam a bunch of food in it.
Yep.
And then.
Yeah, not the safest item.
And then so is the food in there raw or is it cooked or is it like steamed?
So a mesh feeder is a feeder that you place food in and it has to be soft. So it's foods that you can easily squish with a baby's gums. The reason why that's not developmentally appropriate is because those mesh feeders cover the whole entire tongue. So if this is a tongue and we put the mesh feeder on the tongue, how is baby supposed to swallow? Everyone, swallow your saliva. If you're listening to this, swallow your saliva. Feel your tongue elevate to the roof of your mouth to swallow. When these items are placed onto the tongue, then they have to tongue thrust.
Yeah.
Right? And they're pushing that out. So what are we doing? We're teaching this anterior, posterior motion when babies are supposed to elevate their tongue like all of us and pull that back in order to swallow safely.
Yeah.
So these items, very convenient, right? No shaming if parents are using them. Totally get it.
I mean, you don't know what you don't know until you know it from a professional.
Absolutely.
You see it on social media.
Right.
Marketing is obviously a huge thing. So people are spending a ton of money. Marketing teams are spending a ton of money. You're now seeing these ads on your Instagram, on your TikTok, and you don't know because sometimes they'll have like a little thing like developed by, you know, medical professionals, but it might not be someone that's actually working with children. It could just be like someone on their R&D team and that claim is true. It's just not really relevant.
Right.
So when do you, so you go from tabletop feeding, baby leads.
Baby leads.
And then who leads this, the use of utensils?
So that is also baby-led as well. So if we're talking about development.
These kids just do everything.
They rule the world. They can do so much more. It's basically us as a society that stopped children from doing what they're supposed
to be
doing. Right. So I always say there's adult-led feeding and there's baby-led feeding. Adult-led feeding is me having a long-handled spoon and I am feeding you and you're just kicking back, maxing and relaxing. Baby's not doing anything, right? We are doing everything. Baby's not leaning forward. Baby's not working on their sitting skills. Baby's not elevating their tongue. They're not working on lip closure. They're not producing a swallow. We're scraping the lips.
Yeah.
So now baby is turning away and not really
enjoying
mealtime. If it's a baby-led mealtime, then we're giving baby a baby-led utensil, a utensil that they can control, a short handle. And so I designed the cutest little baby-led spoon
I have ever seen in my entire life. Okay, so let's talk about utensils. I'm just going to bring... I'm going to bring them over to here because you came up with this really interesting set and there are more than just a spoon and a little sippy cup.
And it's an open cup.
And it's an open cup. Yes. So are we starting with the open cup?
We are starting with the open cup.
Okay. So lead me through.
Yes.
So baby's no longer feeding on a table. Baby now has this fancy, super suctiony.
Silicone can be fed on the table.
Oh, but there could be feeding on the table.
Yes, I know. It's a lot. It's a lot. Right. So baby goes from breast or bottle to sips from an open cup.
Okay.
So the developmental milestone for open cup drinking is between 4 and 6 months of age, babies should be drinking from an open cup.
4 to 6 months of age.
That is a developmental milestone. Yes. There are no
show of hands in here at 4 to 6 months of age where your children or people in your family drinking from a cup. Because I was not. Yours is.
Yes.
You're a better human than me. I feel like this is new news.
Yeah. So no, it's actually research from the 1970s.
Oh, great. Babies... So I am not up with the research.
No. Well, and here's the thing. Most families don't know that.
Yeah.
And it's not available. So most
families, the size of this cup,
it's so tiny
in comparison to a water bottle.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
look at this. It's so small.
It's 2 ounces. And so
oh my God. If I you drink think more about, vodka than this,
If you think about development, parents think that they should go from breast or bottle to a sippy cup, which is, tends to be 12 to 16 ounces.
It's a lot.
But babies are only supposed to have 1 to 2 ounces. So we've got this ginormous cup covering baby's face. So it's covering baby's nasal passage, covering baby's oral passage, and it can actually cause issues because they're not able to see inside of the cup because of the lids. So this is developmentally appropriate for baby's little hands. You also see cups out on the market with handles. Think about drinking a coffee cup with two handles and trying to bring that up to your mouth.
And breathe at the same
time.
And breathe.
It is so difficult. And maintain your balance. Babies are supposed to bring their hands to midline, be able to lift that up. Now, the milestone is 4 to 6 months of age. Babies are taking drinks from a cup held by a caregiver.
Okay.
So we are holding and controlling. So we're putting breast milk or formula in here. We are not giving baby water at that age because it can cause damage to the kidneys. We are
giving breast milk or formula. Really? No water before 4 to 6?
No.
Wow.
And most GI doctors say no water until 12 months of age. I introduce water
around
9 to 10 months because, again, we do not want to decrease baby's nutrition. If baby's little tummy fills up with water, where's the breast milk or formula going to go?
Right.
So we want babies to have that brain development in order to be able to have that fat content, grow that brain, and help to engage baby in more sensory activities.
Oh my gosh.
So from an oral standpoint, we want lip closure.
Okay.
So we want babies to be able to put their lips onto the cup. We're working on lip closure, which you're not getting with the sippy cup. You're not getting that with the 360 type of cup. That is the first muscle movement we want, lip closure. Because if we're swallowing our saliva, what's the first thing we do? Close our lips to swallow our saliva. So we want baby to be able to start to do that in order to decrease drooling.
Wow.
In order to be able to help with pre-verbal.
I know. Normal. So moms come into the dental office often and their babies are just covered in drool. And they're like, oh, drooling is normal. And for a dental person, our brains are like, okay, saliva is good.
Right,
saliva is enzymatic. Yep. If they're on solids, it helps create that bolus. It's self-cleansing, pH balancing. Like, there's a lot of benefits to saliva.
Yes.
And we have a hard time when we lack saliva.
Yep.
Lots of GI issues happen in that sense, too. But is it normal to have a baby who is constantly pooling saliva? And then I look at lip posture. So on the myofunctional therapy side, I look at, do they have full lip closure?
Yes.
Do they or do they not have teeth? What are the positioning of the teeth?
Mm-hmm.
And then what habits do they have? Maybe they're mouth breathing instead of nose breathing. And then I ask about sleep. I look at underneath their eyes, like the color and tone and consistency and texture of their skin. But that's all I know. So then what? So then how does that get to you? And how much drool is too much drool?
Yeah. So,
and how do you control that? Because I can't do exercises with a toddler. Like, they're not going to listen to me at 2.
You can do an exercise
with cups. Now I can.
You can. Yeah. So this is when a baby is drooling and I see babies that drool, it lets me know that they're not swallowing their saliva. So that tends to be one of the first signs of a possible tongue tie, right? It could be a sign of a lip tie, a buccal tie. It could just be oral delays, which we can, again, help with introducing that open cup. When I see babies that are drooling, that lets me know that the tongue is not elevating and the lips are not closing, which you can both rectify with open cup drinking. So when we are drinking from a cup, we are putting our lips onto the cup. And when that bolus, that liquid bolus is coming down, we are, again, elevating, just like we did with our saliva. We're elevating that tongue posture and retracting it. So we're actually doing, I would say, squats. We're doing squats for the mouth, right, to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Soon, baby will decrease that saliva. And what you were saying earlier is that if that all that saliva, that good saliva that we want, right? These are the babies that tend to be very constipated.
Yeah.
We want that good saliva to not go onto a bib. We want that to go
into their body.
So that they're learning how to be able to swallow that saliva, being able to help. It's going to help decrease choking risk when baby start solids. So we want them to actually, those are free feeding skills that babies can master before we ever put a strip of avocado into their mouth. Like, we want them to be able to do that. And open cup drinking can help.
And this cup is interesting because it doesn't make them lift their head up. So you probably can't see this at home, but essentially,
it is cone-shaped.
It's cone-shaped. So it's not just like your standard in flat bottom. So if I were to drink out of this, I actually wouldn't have to put my head back.
No.
Right? So I can take a full sip of whatever is in here.
Yes.
Even if there's just a little teeny tiny drop.
Absolutely.
Because
Absolutely.
Of its shape.
And that's really important because when we think about positioning, we were just talking about positioning with breastfeeding or bottle feeding. When we're thinking about positioning, we never want a child to have their head tilted back like they do when they're drinking from a sippy cup. As you guys know, the more that the head is tilted back, the airway is opened. The more that our chin is tucked forward, the airway is closed. The esophagus is open more. So we want to be able to have a cup that places children in a safe position for eating and drinking, decreasing choking risk and decreasing aspiration pneumonia. So what I did is I designed it to be cone-shaped so that the child can just drink and never have to tilt their airway back.
Yeah.
Tilt their head back to open up their airway. So it makes it nice and easy. You could put thin liquids in here like breast milk or formula. You could put thicker liquids like purees to be able to help. You could do smoothies into the cup and allow for a child to be able to have that good positioning. And then we're setting our kids up for success, right? We're allowing them to be able to help drink from the cup, right? So sometimes the baby, you're holding it, but sometimes the babies will hold on to it as well. And then it helps them to make their next open cup milestone. So at 4 to 6 months of age, we're offering sips of babies from a cup that a caregiver is holding. By 12 months, babies are supposed to be drinking independently.
In the same volume?
In the same volume with some
spillage. This cup should last someone like over a year of their
lives.
Absolutely,
absolutely. And then at 24 months of age.
So it's basically free in girl math.
In girl math.
So if I have a baby.
Yes.
Baby's 12. I paid for the cup once.
Yes.
It's like less than a dollar a day. So basically the cup is free. Okay.
Great. And then at 24 months, they should drink from an open cup with no spillage.
Yeah.
And those are developmental milestones.
No spillage.
No spillage.
How much spillage is enough? Is like how many times do you see a baby filling, you refill this cup before they actually get 2 ounces into their human?
Yeah. So if you go onto social and you see and you put in the tiny cup, you'll see 8-month-old babies drinking it with no problems whatsoever. Because what
it's weighted.
Yeah. So I also made the cup weighted. So it makes it a little bit easier. Why that's important is that it helps to have babies know where the cup is in space. So it allows them to bring it to their mouth. The silicone also helps as this gets covered with drool and milk.
Not slippery.
That doesn't make it slip. Exactly. Yeah. And it's allowing baby to continue to feel that weight.
We talked a lot about this one cup. There's so much science. This is why I wanted to have the podcast. Cause I was like, this is
so great.
I love science about like the reasons why we do things.
Yeah.
I think that's really valuable.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've moved away from feeding, but we didn't talk about teething at all.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Which I want to talk about at least one of the items.
Yeah.
I'm going to move this over because we'll come back to cup feeding in a second.
Okay.
So there's two. Fun fact, I've never seen these items before in my life. And I immediately recognized what they were for because on the dental side and then on the myofunctional therapy side, I can evaluate the concerns of what patients come in with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I can envision what something like this would be used for. So we talked about breast milk.
Yeah.
And then we've seen these like little, what are they called? Like freezy pops or popsicle looking things. Mm-hmm. There's like a variety of ones that you get for adult kids. How old and why? Full sentence.
Yes. So popsicles are a thing that children love. There's never been a popsicle mold for infants, specifically for their oral cavity. So parents will freeze their breast milk and fill up popsicle molds that are actually designed for toddlers. So they're
typically like square ones, right? They look
square,
like square.
Or they're big circles,
or they're really big.
Then they fill up the entire oral cavity. So what happens is that there tends to be 4 ounces and an infant's tummy is very small. We know that it should be 1 to 2 ounces.
So is this 2 ounces?
And this is a half of an ounce.
Wow.
So these popsicles are designed specifically for infants 4 months and above. So it consists of
4 months.
4 months.
So
the silicone, the silicone mold that you can fill with breast milk or formula. They're a half an ounce each. You lock it into place with breast milk formula at that 4 to 5, 6 month age group. At 6 months of age and your child showing all the signs of readiness, you could put food in here. Mashed up avocado, yogurt, you know, any type of purees and put it in the freezer.
What
for
are good
2 hours
foods? Like if you were to say we're going to solids, and we're gonna try this with a popsicle item. And my instinct is not to do sugary things like too many fruits and like very high sugar content, although I'm sure they're delicious and baby would love them. Is it true that if you start incorporating sweet foods to baby, that they will dislike the broccoli and the like vegetables? Is that true?
There's
or false?
No research to support that.
Myth or no?
In fact, we want babies to have a variety of tastes, colors, temperatures, and textures in order to decrease picky eating. So research shows that if we offer baby a variety of tastes, colors, textures, and temperatures, then the picky eating phase that every single baby goes through will be shorter. So we want to be able to do that. So that's actually one of the reasons why I designed the Tiny Pops, is to offer baby a different type of temperature, right?
Tiny Pops.
We can offer breast milk at room temperature. We can offer breast milk cold. We can offer breast milk warm. We can now freeze it. So we can offer a variety of the keeping the taste the same, but changing the temperature, right?
So this is baby led.
This is baby led.
And the little projections at the top.
Yes.
Those are obviously for sensory, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what these sensory bumps do is that they actually allow, especially if you're using breast milk, for that milk to go into the gum line. So as that tooth starts to emerge, we know that breast milk can go in there and help decrease inflammation.
Yeah.
If we have decreased inflammation, we have decreased pain. We have decreased pain, we have decreased crying, we have a very happy parent. So I was like, how can I take that research?
And the cold also is an anesthetic
form
too.
Right.
So it really helps alleviate that like teething pain.
Yes.
So 4 months.
4 months of
baby led.
Baby led. So it's got this little chunky handle.
Does it take them to devour one of these items?
A couple of minutes, because actually our mouths are very hot. And so it's able to put it into the baby's mouth. Baby has a good sensory experience. It lasts a few minutes. It's only a half of an ounce, so parents don't feel like they're wasting too much of their breast milk, and that the child actually is able to work on lip rounding, right?
Yeah.
Which is a prerequisite for straw drinking. So we want to be able, this is another pre-feeding skill, that if we have baby working on these popsicles, we're working on the lip rounding, we're working on those orbicularis oris muscles, so that when we move and transition to straw drinking, we already have that prerequisite in order to help make straw drinking a little bit more successful. Now we can help get them off of a bottle, right? We've got different ways to offer this formula or this breast milk, right? We're able to do straw drinking, open cup drinking, popsicles. We've got the muscle movements to be able to get off of that bottle. For speech pathologists, we want baby off by that first birthday.
Off bottle by
off
first
bottle
birthday.
Completely by
say
first
that again.
Birthday.
Off bottle,
off bottle
by
first birthday.
Birthday. Okay.
Yes.
So baby's off bottle by the first birthday.
Yes.
Baby moves into being an independent baby, getting a part-time job, paying the rent. But before that, for me, tongue posture is very important.
Oh, yes.
Tongue posture, up roof of the mouth, touching the roof of the mouth in a variety of different spots, not just behind the two front teeth at the incisive papilla.
Yes.
And that helps lead to better tongue posture. There are toys on the market that don't promote that. So I see a variety of kids in the office, and they have 1,000 different pacifiers, and there's like one falls on the floor, no problem. There's a bag more, and they're all different, and they all look and they kind of have different, I don't know, deformities, let's say. But it's this like, okay, well, someone gave it to me as a gift, or it was on sale or whatever. It had 15,000 reviews on Amazon.
Right.
But it doesn't promote what we're trying to promote as dental professionals, a lip closed posture, lips together, teeth slightly apart, at rest, not initiating facial muscles to keep the lips closed. You mentioned talking about like lip closure with using the orbicularis oris, but also the mentalis.
Yep.
And we see these strained faces in little tiny humans because they're trying, their bodies want to keep their lips together because they want to breathe through their nose, but they start building these mouth breathing issues, and it all starts with their tongue.
Yes.
And you see babies that are sleeping. So one of the questions that I ask parents is, do you have any photos of them while they're asleep? Like fast asleep. I want to see. I want to see them fast asleep. And they'll send me mouth open photos with their child with their mouth open. So you get into a bunch of other stuff. Well, we can do a part 15 on taping and whatever. But it all starts with having the right teething toys.
Yes.
And it seems so simple and seemingly like Duh.
Right.
But.
Well, and it's every baby needs to be able to
mouth. But you have three. So there's three of them.
We have three.
That are in a little pack.
Yes.
The cutest little baby on the side.
Yes, every baby needs the mouth. They need to be able to explore their mouth in a variety of different ways. And if we don't provide them with mouthing tools, then they're going to get your keys or pick stuff up off the floor. That's what they're going to do. So we want to be able to offer baby a variety of textures. Remember when I was talking about we want to offer baby a variety of tastes, textures, temperatures, and different colors. Then we can do that with mouthing toys. So we can start to get them to actually move their mouth in a variety of different movements. Variety is key. If we can get the baby to move their mouth in different ways, then they're going to be able to eat a variety of textures when we offer different foods, especially if we're going to offer baby a variety of different cultural foods too.
Right.
So we want to be able to offer baby an experience in the pre-feeding stage that allows for that mouth to develop. And so that when they go into a feeding stage, it can continue to do that with
food. So this toy, to me, it's going to promote like this exploratory tongue movement in this hole.
Yes.
Right? So baby's going to hold it with baby's little hands.
Yes.
And to me, is that what this is intended for?
Yes.
For them to strengthen their muscle of their tongue?
Yes. I designed it to help as baby is chewing, the tongue can actually come protrude up through to help with that tongue elevation that we all have that nice swallow reflex. We want babies to be able to have that front of the mouth stimulated, but still allow that tongue to come through. And then we want baby to be able, since this is a baby-led mouthing tool, baby is able to hold onto that and bring it to their own mouth. So we're
it's also weighted too.
Yes, like it's also weighted.
You guys can't feel this, but they have a nice weight and it looks like it's like bottom heavy.
Yes.
I play tennis, so there's like a thing in tennis rackets where it's like either a head heavy or like a grip head heavy tennis racket. So and when I play tennis, I like a grip heavy tennis racket.
Yes.
So I actually put lead tape on my tennis. So I feel like I have better control. So I feel like is that the same?
Yeah, it gives you more is what we call sensory input. It gives you more sensory input into the hand. When we get more sensory input into the hand, then we want to generally bring that and move that. So that's why the cup is weighted. That's why the utensils are weighted. That's why the mouthing tools are weighted is to have baby grab onto that and want to really move because we want to move.
And build their biceps.
Build their biceps.
Baby's going to be so jacked after using these.
Help baby
these
bring
like, little chubby babies with big biceps.
I love that. So and then have that hand and mouth movement, which is a sign of readiness. So these are pre-feeding skills that are allowing baby to have that sign of readiness so that we know that baby is ready to start solids, is bringing that to the mouth.
This is for cutting cake, right? Baby is learning to cut food.
Yes,
I mean, I'm sure they do. What is this?
So this tool,
very happy, smiley looking.
Yes. Thing. So we have we have a mat, a play and place mat all in one that suctions to the table so kids can't toss and throw. And it is a happy face shape. So it is kind of reminiscent of our plates, but also it's working on jaw stability. So I'm sure you see this too. I see a lot of babies that have one side of their jaw that is just strong and working great, and the other side that's really not engaged.
That the dental world, that leads to cross bites.
Yes, exactly.
And in the oral malfunctional world, that leads to lateral tongue thrust. So there's lateral tongue thrust, which lead to lateral, like a slurry kind of speech issue, a lisp, like a lateral lisp. So
and
I see that in when there's favoring.
Yes.
Yes.
And usually that comes from babies being tethered. Babies are not supposed to be tethered.
Like we're not supposed to hang them from something?
Yeah. We see them. Yeah. A pacifier or they're tethered to the shirt or they're tethered to a parent's shirt or they're tethered to their stroller. And so babies tend to be like this very often. I get pictures as well. I ask for parents to take pictures in a variety of different seating arrangements that baby is, and they're always being tethered to one side. And that stimulates them not having as much bone growth on that side. It actually stimulates them not using their neck muscles. They're actually getting a little bit flatter of their heads on one side. So we want everything to be midline, right? If we think about the tongue is midline. We want the tongue to always be able to elevate. We want the head to be up and at midline. And that's how we eat. We are having a midline meal. We're not having our plate over here and our cup over here. Everything is at midline. So we want our babies to have all those pre-feeding movements.
Well, it's all ergonomic building, right?
Yes.
So you're building ergonomics at the most developmental time, too.
Yes.
Because you know that their bones are super malleable at those like formative years. So you don't want to have too many things all over.
So we want to help with that jaw stability. And if we have jaw stability, then the jaw is a primary articulator. So for those babies that are constantly being tethered, then what happens is that their pre-verbal skills are very, very low. They're not babbling. They're not cooing. They're not engaging with their caregiver. And so we end up starting to have speech delays very early on. So we want to have mouthing tools that are baby-led and that baby can bring to that mouth and be able to keep themselves up at midline.
Okay, so true or false, babies get tired of toys. At this age, can they actually form an opinion?
That's
like
false.
They can form an opinion about a bottle because that's giving them the nutrients they need to survive.
Yes.
So obviously,
yes.
Baby's going to be in survival mode whether they know it or not.
Yeah.
So, but can you survive teething, which starts at, I mean, for some people, it starts at 6 months, 7 months, or they're born with teeth.
Yep.
And in your case, you said you've seen people that have gotten to 15 months without a tooth.
Without a tooth.
So can they live and survive 15 months to 24 months to when we stop counting months?
Yeah.
When do we stop counting months?
After 36 months.
Okay. So can they live to 36 months with three toys?
Yeah. So
tools. Not toys. They're tools.
They're tools.
Yes.
What Amazon says is the average parent buys 10 mouthing tools. So that is a lot of money because most of the mouthing tools are anywhere between $20 and $32. So that's a lot of money. And they're doing that because they're trying, again, to find something that will really soothe baby. What parents are really looking for is I'm like, yes, these are self-soothing toys. But what we really want baby to do is have the developmental movements in order to not need the sensory input.
Got it.
So if the tongue is in the right place, then baby's not going to be as fussy. If the lips are in the right place, baby's not going to be as fussy. If baby's breathing through their nose, they're not going to be as fussy. What we're going to see then is a lot more cooing, a lot more engaging movements to be able to help. Well, I want to show that one.
Which one?
This one. We haven't talked about
it. It looks like
yet.
A toothbrush.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So this one is our stick development tool. And what this does is that it allows for stimulation onto the gum line. So what we're doing in
the back.
Pre-feeding in the back.
Yeah.
The whole gum line. So what we're doing in pre-feeding is we want to stimulate that gum line because babies can chew food without any teeth. So there is a feeding method called baby-led weaning, and you are giving babies soft sticks of food, the length and thickness of an adult pinky finger, and we're cutting those soft pieces of food and offering that to baby and skipping purees.
So that's what my friend is doing.
Yes.
So baby has like four front teeth on the lower and a couple on the top.
Nice.
And that's the charcuterie board that baby has. It's just a variety of like pieces of things.
Yes.
And they're about that size.
Yes. Yes.
So I don't know. I don't think they are offering purees, but they're those like little squishy things. And I think they're like an on the go solution. Mm-hmm. But like mealtime is baby charcuterie.
Food. Yeah. So it's basically all the foods that we're eating. We're just making them soft for baby.
Yeah.
So it's just being able to cook the foods a little bit longer. Have them being cooked in fat, like our proteins, the extra fat, so that it makes it nice and soft and moist for baby to be able to
eat. What kind of fats would you use? Like, are we talking like olive oil or like coconut oil?
Well, we
or
can do any of those fats,
avocado
but
oil.
Usually it's like lamb. So lamb
like
has a very fatty. Lamb is very meaty. I always say, because I'm Latina, I'm always like, hey, you know, we're going to get out that pork. We're going to be able to get anything that's fatty that we don't want to eat.
Oh, yeah.
We want that for baby. Again, we're going to offer baby nice fatty foods because fat means moisture. Moisture means soft. Soft means safety. So we want to be able to do that. So I designed this to be the length and thickness of an adult pinky finger so that baby can actually learn how to munch and be able to learn how to chew in order to be able to be safe. Once we start those solids, baby already has that ability to have that gum line stimulated, know how to be able to chew effectively. And then when we offer those sticks of foods, parents are going to feel a little bit more confident and knowing that baby-led weaning is going to be very successful.
How scary is it when a baby starts to choke?
So
I mean, and when do you intervene? Because there are...
Yeah.
Baby needs to build those muscles and those skills as well.
Right.
Choking is a terrifying thing.
Absolutely.
But what do you say to that? What say you?
What is parents' number one fear? And that is choking.
Yeah.
So I always tell families, if you do the pre-feeding skills and you do the feeding skills, then it decreases your risk of choking. So what parents can do, and I have a whole choking course on this, but what parents can
Where
do.
Where is this choking course?
Online. I can give it to you.
Yeah, the show notes.
So what parents can do is have a high chair that has a footrest that baby's feet can be completely firmly planted.
So you don't want them
We don't want
dangling.
Dangling feet is high risk of choking.
Really?
Because like we are on these little stools.
Yeah.
Take your feet out and just.
I can't. I don't, my instincts won't allow me
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then that's I'm having my feet.
So you need like a platform.
You need a platform. Baby's feet should be flat on a footrest because of the fact that if baby has something that goes down the wrong way,
they'll
need to exactly have that push forward motion with their feet in order to breathe through their nose and be able to cough and have a nice productive cough. If baby's feet are dingling, which is a whole bunch of high chairs,
yeah.
allow baby's feet to dingle. They don't have feeding therapists design high chairs. So the feet
Dear
dingle,
feeding therapists out there, please write letters.
That's me. That's me.
Get your people.
Get my people.
Together.
So then the airway is open. So they're having to actually hold their breath. And so that food can be inhaled very easily. Second thing is that they're usually drinking from a sippy cup.
Yeah.
For parents who don't know. So we have the anterior posterior motion of the tongue. So the child has not learned how to be able to swallow safely. So if that tongue is going in
they're
and out,
this, like,
you're swallowing big chunks of food and it can increase choking.
Yeah.
Another thing is that these babies tend to be leaning back a little bit more. So parents will start a little early, not knowing of the safety risk. So they don't have that sitting ability. So if they're leaning back in their high chair, now we have an open airway. Sorry.
So we don't have jacked babies with their massive biceps. They definitely aren't working on their obliques.
Yes.
They're not breathing through their noses.
Yes.
Things are just falling apart.
Falling apart for baby.
And we have a couple of minutes left. Oh, I will encourage anyone. I know some of you are being really engaged. So if you have any questions, I will open the floor up to some questions. But I want you to end with, oh my God, there's so many things on my list that we didn't even get to.
Part two.
The sippy cup. So we have seen the sippy cups. How do we feel about the, you know, like that looks like a Yeti cup for babies.
Yeah.
And it has little handles and it's too big and it's too bulky, but it's out there. So how do you feel about transitioning babies from milk to teeny tiny 2 ounce to what's next? And I know you have a variety of them.
Yes. Yes.
So is this, do they come together or is this like you buy it after you already bought the other one?
Nope. That one is for infants.
Yeah.
And then this
so
is four
months
older
to
babies to toddlers. Four
12
months to 12
months. Okay.
And then this one is for babies 9 months of age to 15 months.
So you can in conjunction with that one, you can use these
absolutely.
Side by side
absolutely.
Depending on where you are or what you're doing. Okay.
So sippy cups sabotage solids. That's my big quote that I'm always being
sippy
quoted.
Sippy cups sabotage
solids.
Okay.
So if parents are having difficulties with solids, my first question is your child on a sippy cup? Because again, it's promoting the anterior posterior motion. So then they say, oh, no, we're not using a sippy cup. We're actually using a 360 cup or a spoutless cup. And I'm like, okay, we need to get off that too. Because what that does is if you use a 360 cup or a spoutless cup, you're jutting the jaw to be able to get out. And we don't swallow like that. So what happens is now I have to get the child off of that cup, help stabilize the jaw to be able to understand the up and down pressure instead of the jutting out pressure, and then be able to work on lip closure and lip rounding in order to be able to help facilitate.
Which is the hardest part of swallowing.
Straw drinking. Yes. And it does so
much. So you have little ones that can't actually drink through a straw.
Right.
Because they don't have that lip closure.
Right.
And they haven't built those right muscles.
Well, it's lip rounding.
So then you see these sippy cups that have these ginormous straws.
Huge.
They're like an HVE. They're like 8 millimeters across. We're collecting aerosols with them.
Yes.
So instead of working on the muscles in order to be able to drink out of a regular size straw, we're just giving them bigger straws so that their whole mouth is like open.
And what that's again not designed by a pediatric feeding therapist. So what that does is using gross motor movements instead of fine motor movements.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to drink from a straw is a fine motor movement. We are engaging the orbicularis muscles to engage tightly to be able to help do our balance of our respiration. We hold our breath to be able to swallow.
You said that earlier. It was really nice that, like, the first time a baby drinks through a straw is the first time they hold their breath.
Yes.
And I was like, that is the cutest thing ever on the planet.
Yes.
So you give your baby a straw and you're like witnessing a huge milestone.
Yes, huge. And that's why straw drinking is a developmental milestone.
Yeah.
So most parents don't know that, you know, they hear of like big gross motor milestones like crawling and walking.
Right. But there's the first word.
There's swallowing milestones and oral motor milestones and speech milestones and pre-feeding milestones. It's all that this is the shortest straw on the market.
On the planet.
Because babies have to hold their breath, and we want that straw to be short in order for babies to be able to do that. We want them to engage in their lips, and then we want them to be able to tuck their chin. So we want that curvature to be there so baby doesn't have their airway open. So all of those are critical for picking a safe straw.
Awesome. Well, obviously there's a lot of science that went into this, and science is my homegirl. So thank you for sharing all of this info. Yes. I'll link all of this information in the show notes.
Right.
And hopefully we'll see you at more trade shows, because I think this is really valuable. There are a variety of KOLs that talk about myofunctional therapy, myself included. So I'm happy to connect you with people in order to like get more of this information to our dental people. You said it yourself earlier that you didn't know that dental professionals are a part of your allied group to work with patients. And there are more and more states and more provinces that are allowing dental hygienists to expand their scope of practice in order to develop some of these things with patients. So I'm not the only one. There are many, and some who focus their entire careers on just that. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We're 18 seconds. I have one question time. We'll hang around after. And if anyone has any questions, please feel free. And thanks for another episode of the Tooth Eater Podcast. Until next time. Can you say it with me? Peace out, peeps.
Peace out, peeps.
Bye. Thank you.
Oh, hi. So you made it all the way to the end. Thank you for sticking around. And I hope you enjoyed this episode, found it informative, entertaining, and of course, as per usual, find me hilarious. If you liked what you heard, it would really mean a lot to me if you could show your support by liking, commenting, or sharing this episode with a friend or family member. Your feedback and engagement helped me get on the mic today, and it would also improve our future shows and reach more people who maybe could benefit from our content as well. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to my podcast on your favorite platform or on YouTube. Follow along on this crazy journey with me at toothlife.irene and at toothordare.podcast on Instagram and Twitter. That way you'll be the first to know when episodes are released and you won't miss a beat. I appreciate your support and look forward to bringing you more great episodes in the future. From my team to yours, thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you on the flip side.